it didn't succeed, but that doesn't mean it's not dangerous. And the problem with this cycle of tit for tat is there's so much unpredictability. And if something goes wrong and one missile lands in the wrong spot, we're in a different ballgame.
Welcome to Global Dispatches, a podcast for the foreign policy and global development communities and anyone who wants a deeper understanding of what is driving events in the world today. I'm your host, Mark Leon Goldberg. I am a veteran international affairs journalist and the editor of UN Dispatch. Enjoy the show. Looking for a trustworthy podcast to bring you unfiltered viewpoints and experiences on global health? Tune into Global Health Matters, the podcast that connects silos and amplifies diverse voices to give you a holistic picture. Each month, Dr. Gary Aslanian from the World Health Organization hosts discussions with guests spanning former ministers of health, award-winning journalists and authors, and frontline public health workers. Join listeners from across 180 countries for an exciting season 4, launching in June. Global Health Matters is available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. This is a perilous moment in the Middle East. On April 1st, Israel launched airstrikes on an Iranian diplomatic compound in Damascus, killing 7 Iranian officials, including a very senior general. Iran responded with a massive drone attack on Israel, marking the first time that Iran directly attacked Israeli soil. At time of recording on Tuesday, April 16th, there is heightened prospect of an all-out war between Iran and Israel. And of course, this is all happening in the context of the conflict in Gaza. My guest today, Dalia Dasa-Kay, is a senior fellow at the UCLA Burkle Center for International Relations and a Fulbright-Schumann visiting scholar at Lund University. She has done extensive research and writing on the mechanics of armed conflict escalation in the Middle East, which we discuss in the context of this current crisis. We kick off discussing the recent series of events since April before having a broad conversation about the dynamics of escalation between Israel and Iran. This includes the potential that the United States becomes more deeply dragged into this conflict in the Middle East. Events in Israel, Iran, and the broader region are rapidly unfolding, but this conversation will give you very helpful context for understanding the situation as it evolves in the coming days and weeks and months. As always, please be sure to visit globaldispatches.org, where you can sign up for our newsletter and opt to become a paid supporter of our work. The newsletter offers you even more coverage of international affairs and includes some of my own essay writing as well. I hope to see you there. Now, here is my conversation with Dalia Dasa-Kay. On April 1st, Israel struck an Iranian diplomatic facility in Damascus, killing a senior Iranian general and 6 other people. What do we know about that attack, who Israel targeted, and why?
So that was a pretty important attack and pivotal attack, as it turns out. Israel was following a pattern of increasingly targeting IRGC, so Revolutionary Guard Forces of Iran, and increasingly was targeting their leadership in Iran, but also mostly in Syria. And so this attack on the 1st was a larger than previous ones. It took out General Zahedi, who was one of the lead IRGC generals in charge of Syria and Lebanon, had a lot of experience in Lebanon, was kind of an interlocutor with Hezbollah. So very, very important leaders in terms of Iran's so-called Axis of Resistance network, this axis of non-state actors advancing Iranian interest, also having their own agendas operating across the region from Syria, Lebanon, Iraq, and increasingly Yemen with the Houthis. So this was a big attack. Obviously, Israel had some intelligence that a bunch of these generals would be there at the same time, too, and seven top leadership officials were killed altogether, other Syrians as well. And what made it different was that it was a diplomatic compound. Israel disputes this to some extent, given the nature of these leaders. But from the Iranian perspective, it was their diplomatic consulate section. And so this was viewed as an attack on Iran itself. And generally, the Israelis and the Iranians, for that matter, have tried to avoid direct conflicts or attacks on each other's countries, although on a non-attribution basis, Israel has hit within Iran itself in the past. But this was new territory in that respect.
I want to dig a little deeper on the Iranian perspective on this attack, because, you know, as you describe it, I have to imagine it was pretty devastating. I mean, Israel attacked senior Iranian officials, and striking in particular like a consulate or at least some sort of diplomatic facility in Damascus to kill such a senior general was seemingly norm-breaking, at least in the context of Iran and Israel's kind of tit-for-tat, also maybe more broadly in a international diplomatic perspective. But whatever it was like very audacious. What did this attack look like from Iran's perspective?
Yeah, it was audacious, although, like I said, it didn't come out of the blue. So I think we do need to be clear. It did fit a pattern. I don't think the Iranians were probably particularly shocked, given that the Israelis had been picking off IRGC generals on a regular basis. And I should also mention have been killing top commanders of Hezbollah in pretty large numbers since the attacks on October 7th, hundreds, actually. So I don't think it came out of the blue, but this strike came from an Israeli aircraft. It flattened the building. It looked pretty destructive. It was hard to kind of brush this under the rug as if it's something insignificant. It essentially took out also really key instrumental operational leaders in Iran's network, pretty much destroying their commanders in the Syrian front. So from the Iranian perspective, it didn't come out of the blue, but it certainly would be viewed as a bigger one. And of course, then I think triggered, and there have been ongoing debates from what we understand within Iran between those who really do feel that the Iranians have to respond in a tougher manner to the Israeli attacks, which have been bolder and more frequent in recent months. And they argued this was necessary to restore deterrence. And this seems to have been a tipping point that gave that faction the upper hand. And of course, the Supreme Leader of Iran making the ultimate decision that this did cross a line. So I think that is what made this attack a bit different. There was already, I think, some debate within the Iranian leadership about how much more they could withstand, both in terms of their reputation and the Axis, you know, not really doing that much to be helping Hamas, and also the sense that Israel was pretty much striking with impunity from how it looked where they were sitting.
Do you suspect that Israel kind of understood this internal debate within Iran, and by attacking the consulate in Damascus, essentially sought to goad Iran into responding in ways more perhaps robust than they had in the past, which is, generally speaking, the faction that had been winning these arguments with Iran were those that opted for what they called strategic patience. They would just kind of bolster the proxies in the region and work through them. But by attacking in the way it did, Israel sought to goad Iran into a response.
You're right. That was the kind of overriding stance of the Iranians, the strategic patience outlook, you know, biding their time, working through proxies, avoiding direct attacks on Iran itself. I am not in the camp that believes, and, you know, of course, intentions are always difficult to discern, but I'm not in the camp that believes the Israeli, at least the defense establishment, was trying to goad Iran into an attack. And, you know, this whole kind of conspiracy theory that, you know, Netanyahu wanted to distract, that all could be, you know, true. I mean, it may be, it certainly was a good distraction from Gaza, or has been. But honestly, I think the overriding assumption, and Israeli security analysts have since acknowledged this, was that Iran would be restrained. I think they were not attacking on April 1st because they thought it would goad Iran into a war. I think they were attacking because they didn't think Iran would respond, you know, in any significant manner that departed from previous restraint patterns. So I think there was a sense and a bit of complacency, I would say, in terms of the Israeli assessment of the Iranians, that in a sense, they were almost a paper tiger. And, you know, the assessment in Israel after the Soleimani attack, for example, when the U.S. killed the top Iranian general in 2020, toward the end of the Trump administration, the Israeli assessment was, well, the Iranian counterattack in response to that was pretty mild, actually. And, you know, we shouldn't be so worried. They have reasons for restraint. So I think that there is an understanding now they miscalculated, that they did not quite understand how much domestic pressure the Iranians were likely under, especially from these harder line factions that do seem to have the upper hand across the system today. And so there was probably a miscalculation. And I think that actually raises some of the most interesting questions in the aftermath of this in terms of what the future Israeli response will be.
So I want to get there, but I want to have you sort of explain and interpret Iran's response. Because, I mean, on the one hand, you're seeing this debate within the kind of commentariat right now, suggesting that actually, contrary to what you said, maybe Israel was correct that Iran's response would be restrained in the sense that they telegraphed their attack so far in advance and that this attack turned out to be really weak. So really, maybe the Israeli security establishment was correct, that it really is like a paper tiger. On the other hand, you could say, look, Iran launched 300 drones towards Israel directly from Iranian soil to Israeli soil. This is a huge attack. And like maybe Israel just got lucky. So how do you sort of navigate that debate?
Well, I think it's both. And I do think, you know, we need to be very careful at understanding that you can have calibrated attacks that are attempted to be measured, not, you know, trying to provoke all out war, but they still can be extremely dangerous. That was certainly an assessment of many, myself included, after Soleimani, that actually it was not as mild of a response as some were claiming it to be. You know, it might have been a smaller attack on U.S. forces in Iraq, but there were numerous injuries. And in the aftermath, there were military officials who said, you know, we were very lucky because like 100 to 150 U.S. military personnel could have been killed.
And you're referring to the Trump era assassination of Soleimani.
Yeah, there are parallels because this was, you know, a major attack on an Iranian general, and the Iranians felt a need to respond, but didn't want to respond, just like we're seeing now, in a way that would provoke an American direct attack on Iran. And in fact, it did not. And so they calibrated correctly, but it was still quite dangerous. And there was a lot of luck involved that more damage didn't happen, but there were numerous injuries in that case. In this case of the response that we've seen from Iran launching over 300 missiles and drones, it actually was less successful because of the very impressive missile defense that really took down most of these missiles. The drones were easier, but that's another story. But there was, you know, no casualties, no injuries even, but it was a much more significant attack. So to say it was minimal, no, it was still likely intended to cause some damage, at least to military facilities in Israel. It didn't succeed, but that doesn't mean it's not dangerous. And the problem with this cycle of tit for tat is there's so much unpredictability. And if something goes wrong and one missile lands in the wrong spot, we're in a different ballgame. So I think that the Israeli defense folks who were thinking about this were probably not expecting an attack directly on Israel itself. That is at least what we understand. They were expecting the Iranians to respond after they hit on April 1st, but more kind of in the standard using the proxies and so forth. And even the American officials have indicated that it ended up being on the high end of what they were anticipating an Iranian response would be. So this, I think, just really underscores how unpredictable these kinds of escalation cycles can be.
So I've been really interested to see, you know, in the last few days, like the kind of diplomatic fallout and response from these attacks. It seems to me, and correct me if I'm wrong here, that Iran seems to want to declare victory and move on, saying, you know, we've sent our message, we've restored deterrence. The United States wants Israel and has declared victory, saying this was an unsuccessful attack. Iran has been successfully repelled. We have restored deterrence. The key question now is what Israel will do. Mm-hmm. Is that like a fair assessment?
Yeah, I think it is. And I would add, not just the Iranians do not appear to be interested, and they are hoping to claim victory and hopefully that's it. And they may be overconfident there too. Certainly the U.S. and the Biden administration has been working very hard since the very beginning of the Gaza war, but especially at this dangerous moment to contain this conflict and move toward de-escalation. And I would add, not just the Americans, it's all of our European allies are not interested in escalation. And for that matter, most of the region is not interested and are actively working to de-escalate. The Egyptian foreign minister just spoke to the Israeli foreign minister and the Iranian foreign minister. Nobody in the region is looking for a broader war for all sorts of reasons. They have other priorities, including economic priorities, and wars are not good for economic development and business, and nobody wants a war spilling over to their country. So there's a lot of forces that are interested in just kind of trying to nip this in the bud, saying, okay, this is already bad. We got to this point. We should not have gotten here, but we are where we are. We now have an open, direct Israeli-Iran conflict out of the shadows. This is what everyone had been fearing. Let's hope that this Israeli strike that led to this more, I think, significant Iranian strike than many in Israel had expected will stop this cycle for the time being. I think that's a fair assessment. I think you rightly note, though, it's not clear that that is how it's being read in Israel. And I think that is the big question mark now.
Well, so let's get into that. Israel does have a say here. They were attacked. The war cabinet has been meeting. Mm-hmm. We're recording this on Tuesday, April 16th, around midday. By the time this is published, any number of things might have happened. What are some of the potential Israeli responses that might be considered right now? Like, what has the war cabinet and the Israeli government telegraphed that it's considering in response right now?
There certainly have been statements. The chief of staff of the Israeli military has telegraphed explicitly that Israel will respond. It's not a lot of uncertainty that they will feel the need. This is a massive attack on their territory. I mean, Israel's entire defense strategy historically has been based on keeping wars out of their territory. And here within 6 months, you've had this attack from Hamas, from Gaza, one of the most devastating in its history. And now you've had a direct Iranian air attack, unsuccessful, but still significant, on Israeli territory. So there is going to be pressure to respond, and they are not being shy about messaging that. The more interesting question, I think, is the fact that, you know, we're now days into this now. This is Tuesday, as you said, and this happened Saturday night. You know, we're not hours into this, right? So we're not seeing an Israeli response that was immediate. That could have been an assumption that the Israelis would have felt a need to respond immediately for deterrence sake. This was a massive operation. The fact that it's taking days and not hours, and maybe it will take weeks, we'll see. It's quite unpredictable. But I think that does suggest that Israelis are facing a bit of a bind and that we're seeing debates in Israel that we haven't, frankly, seen for years now when it comes to Iran. Israel has kind of been on autopilot that, you know, will kind of continue this pressure strategy. We've really seen this since the Trump withdrawal from the nuclear deal in 2018 and when Iran started lashing out in 2019. Israel's really taken this window and has really been working on degrading Iranian capabilities and seeing all kinds of opportunities, and Iran has been escalating. So there has been this kind of autopilot that there really hasn't been much pushback, right? We've seen the strategic patience response from Iran prevail up until this point. And so I think what Israel is facing now is a bit of a wake-up call, because while it was not, thankfully, a destructive attack, it did not succeed to cause damage or casualties, it was not expected to go this far. And so now Israeli decision makers are going to have to calculate that when they want to attack Iran or Iranian interests, wherever that might be, that there is now this possibility that the Iranians can attack directly. And the Iranians have messaged themselves that any future attack, they're establishing kind of new rules of the game is what they're suggesting, which is from now on, any Israeli attack will be met or there'll be the possibility of a direct response. Who knows if they'll follow through, but now Israeli decision makers have to calculate that. So as they're thinking about their response to this attack, they're no doubt now more concerned about the costs that Israel could pay directly. So that's, I think, a factor. And then the other one is going to be, you know, the U.S. support for this. And the Biden administration has said that, yes, we will come, ironclad support will come to your defense no matter what, when attacked. But we're not going to be part of an offensive assault on Iran, because at this point, the administration is signaling, you know, consider this a win. We successfully defended Israel. The missile defense worked. Israel performed well. And we do not want to go to war with Iran directly. So I think that is probably causing some pause in terms of debates within Israel about how far to go. And they've also had a lot of international support that, frankly, they lost following Israel's assault on Gaza. So I think there's, you know, some decision makers in Israel saying, you know, let's take a pause here. Let's take a breath. Let's be smart. Let's not take rash action. The Israeli public seems to not be pushing for war with Iran. There's still a lot of focus on Gaza and the fact that there's still hostages there. You have a Lebanon front in the north that's very heated. So, you know, there's a lot of reasons to suggest there could be caution. But the bottom line is you have a war cabinet that is quite hawkish, overall cabinet, I should say, not just the war cabinet. Prime Minister Netanyahu himself has been cautious in the past. But generally speaking, the argument for strategic patience has not been prevailing among this set of decision makers or leaders currently in Israel. So I don't think we know what they're going to do or how far they'll go. But I would say that some of these arguments about Israel needs strategic patience, they make a lot of sense. And, you know, I think that's why we're seeing debates now. But I wouldn't bet on that winning the day. And so we could see more serious Israeli activity, but even limited Israeli strikes within Iran itself could lead to an Iranian counterattack at this point, given their messaging. So I think, you know, this is not over and continues to be very worrying.
So I wanted to ask you what escalation might look like. Again, we don't know what will happen. I'm not going to ask you to like predict the future, but I know you've done a lot of research and writing over the years about what escalatory cycles between Israel, Iran, and to a certain extent, the United States look like.
Yeah.
And, you know, if there ever was a moment that this escalatory ladder might be climbed, it's seemingly now for all the reasons you just described. So what might escalation look like? What are some perhaps best case in quotes and worst case scenarios that, you know, we might expect in the coming days or weeks?
Yeah, I mean, I'm caveating this by saying, you know, best case is still very bad.
I was trying to do like a little air quotes. The air quotes don't come through on the podcast.
Yeah, exactly. You know, we are not in a good news situation here, because we have to remind ourselves constantly that, you know, it's not a hypothetical. We do have a regional war going on, and Gaza is continuing in the backdrop of this. But that said, probably the best case is that Israel would be strategically patient and you would not see an immediate response. I mean, I mentioned the Soleimani example earlier because, you know, this isn't hypothetical. Yes, the response to the U.S. attack from the Iranians was not as massive as what we just saw over the weekend against Israel. It was just, I think, 15 missiles launched against a U.S. airbase in Iraq. But like I said, it was actually more damaging. You had over 100 traumatic brain injuries, much less warning time, some warning time, but not almost 2 weeks of warning time or 12 days of warning time that the Israelis got to prepare for this attack from Iran. And obviously, it's not a perfectly similar situation, but the U.S. did not respond after that. This was in the Trump administration. So even the Trump administration, very hard line in Iran, did not respond. And they kind of said, okay, we're done. We've all restored deterrence and let's go back to doing what we do and pressuring each other in other ways. So that it's not out of the realm of possibility. It's low probability, but that is the best case scenario, that this round is over and Iran and Israel kind of go back to doing more shadowy things, covert sabotage. Likely Israel will continue assassinations, but won't take attribution. It just won't acknowledge they're making these strikes. And that gives more wiggle room. That's less likely. You know, more likely is Israel will attack slightly less bad, but also bad. But Israel would attack militia groups aligned with Iran. This could potentially be very bad if they start targeting Hezbollah, because Hezbollah is already a very, very worrying flashpoint in terms of a potential northern war front between Hezbollah and Israel. But that is in the realm of possibilities. And I should also note that all of this is much more serious because One thing we've never seen in past options is Israel's actually never claimed responsibility for attacks on Iran. They've always worked in this non-attribution. So this is a new territory we're in if Israel is going to claim, and as I think they will likely do, responsibility for attacking Iran or its interest. But of course, the most serious would be Israelis attacking Iran and Iranian territory directly. Mm-hmm. And that is what I think many are expecting. And then within that, there's a spectrum of limited strikes. And this is something actually Israel has done in the past. It just didn't take credit for it. People forget, but it wasn't that long ago, February 2023, Israel struck an Iranian military facility in Isfahan, in Iranian territory. Again, not taking credit, but did already cross that line of attacking Iran directly. Iran is never, until this point, over the weekend, Iran had never attacked Israel directly. So this was crossing a new threshold. Israel has attacked Iran directly in the country.
But not like overtly. It had always been not for attribution. And if Israel responds this time, it would, you know, fly directly in and announce what they did.
Yes. And that creates more domestic pressure for Iranian leaders, and then they'd have to respond in kind. But so one option is that they do it overtly, but it's more limited to military sites. And it's, you know, something that the Iranians possibly can live with because there's, you know, limited damage, limited casualties, and that's the end of the story. That would be a better case scenario. But probably the worst case scenario is we could be getting into a more expansive Israeli strike within Iranian territory that the Iranian leadership would view as threatening their ability to stay in power, you know, threatening assets of the leadership itself. And a part of that strike, it could be kind of multi-front, but it could not just be assassinating certain leaders, certain governmental sites, you know, kind of messaging, but also strikes on the nuclear facilities. And then that's when you start getting into a serious, I'm just getting to the far end of the spectrum. I don't we think that's likely. And it doesn't look like that's what Israel would be after now because of those considerations I mentioned earlier, which is that they understand now the price will be a lot higher. The Iranians would respond. The Americans are not going to welcome this. International community is not going to welcome this. The neighborhood's not going to welcome this. There's a lot to lose for Israel doing something too expansive. So it's likely looking for that, just like the Iranians were trying to do, that kind of calibrated middle ground position. But of course, the worry is always that these so-called middle ground calibrated positions can go wrong. And, you know, you don't get the luck one time and things spiral out of control.
Yeah. And they could be misinterpreted.
And can be misinterpreted.
Like Israel could consider what it did restrained and calibrated.
Yes.
But Iran could interpret that differently. And the escalatory cycle climbs.
Yes. And that's exactly what we already saw with, you know, Iran's attack on Israel, where, you know, from the Iranian position, I think they were quite restrained. Yes, it was a lot of missiles being launched, but, you know, 12 days of notice, Hezbollah wasn't involved, you know, some of their most lethal capabilities that could really, really wreak havoc in Israel were not used. And so from their perspective, they thought they were calibrating. From Israel's perspective, this was a massive attack on Israeli territory. So this is the dilemma here.
So within that kind of escalatory cycle, what are some of the circumstances in which the United States might get drawn into like a shooting war here?
First of all, we just need to remind all the listeners that unfortunately, the U.S. has already been drawn in. So again, I mentioned, you know, the Biden administration's goal, I think smartly from the beginning of the Gaza war was to try to at least stop the spread and did not intend to be involved or have U.S. military forces involved. But then the U.S., despite that interest and intention, has been involved on two fronts. It's been actively involved in confronting the Houthi attacks on maritime commerce in the Red Sea, and that continues to this day. And while there's a lull, American forces were targeted, many, you know, like over 180 attacks since the war by militia forces aligned with Iran from Iraq and Syria. So the U.S. has already had to be and has had to respond to those attacks as well and killed some militia leaders and launched strikes within Syria. So, you know, the U.S., I think it's important to note, has already been involved in military conflict. But I think your question is probably getting at, you know, how much more will we get involved? Like, will we be fighting Iran directly? Because that's something that the U.S. has tried to avoid, not just this administration, but many administrations before it. Even, as I said, the Trump administration, which was much more hardline on Iran, actually did not want a direct conflict with Iran to expand. So it's really hard to say, but obviously if Israel really faced a multi-front attack from Hezbollah and resurgence of attacks in the south, and the Houthis got, and you know, some of these strikes got through, and major urban centers in Israel were threatened, you know, it's hard, even if the Biden administration said, look, we're not going to support your offensive response against Iran, if that provokes a counter response that is so massive that Israel and Israeli civilians are threatened, I think it would be hard to imagine the U.S. not feeling the need to defend Israel. So that's some possibility. The other is something that is, that's a more extreme and hopefully unlikely, but a more likely scenario where the U.S. could get roped into things again, and as I said, they already are, is that we see a resurgence of the attacks on U.S. military forces that are still remaining in Iraq and Syria by Iranian-aligned groups, and that can kind of be turned up again. And so the U.S. could get involved in terms of having to defend itself in that arena, because Iran, you know, may decide to respond against the U.S. if something escalates as it has in the past with Israel. They may see that as a calibrated, measured type of response, but that's certainly a continuing worry for U.S. military leaders.
We'll have to leave it there. These are very uncertain times, but you provided very helpful context for understanding events as they may unfold in the coming, you know, days, weeks, months, hours, perhaps even. So thank you.
Thank you, Mark. Yeah, very unsettling times.
Thanks for listening to Global Dispatches. The show is produced by me, Mark Leon Goldberg. It is edited and mixed by Levi Sharp. If you are listening on Apple Podcasts, make sure to follow the show and enable automatic downloads to get new episodes as soon as they're released. On Spotify, tap the bell icon to get a notification when we publish new episodes. And of course, please visit globaldispatches.org to get on our free mailing list, get in touch with me, and access our full archive. Thank you.